People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note here on Fine Music Radio. Quite an unusual subject today. A book has been released recently called In Dire Straits, and it was written by the Wright Girls. Wright is spelled W-R-I-T-E. Now, once upon a time, and I'm reading you from how the Wright Girls came into being, once upon a time at the very tip of Southern Africa, six enthusiastic women formed a creative writing group. They came from diverse backgrounds and cultures, different countries and age groups, but they shared a burning desire to write, and they called themselves the Wright Girls. They've been meeting regularly for more than a decade, and this is their fourth book, In Dire Straits, following the short story collections Women Like Us and Seven Women, and the novel The Man with the Blue Eyes. And incidentally, profits are donated to various charitable causes, including the firefighters of Cape Town. Now, the Wright Girls have defied the obvious question, how can six women possibly write books together? How is that possible, just sort of from the point of view of logistics? Well, with me is Priscilla Holmes, who, I think, Priscilla, can I call you the leader of the group? And welcome, by the way.
Thank you for having me, Rodney. It's lovely to be on the program. I'm not really the leader. Well, I started the group.
Okay. But I think we'll call you the founder.
I'm the founder member, yes. Okay. That's right.
So I want to just know, before we start talking about your book, In Dire Straits, and I know there's some exciting stories there, how on earth did this come into being? Well, how did you begin? Tell me how it all got together.
Well, when I first came to live in Cape Town about 10, 12 years ago from Johannesburg, I was looking for friends and joined the International Women's Club, and through them started to a writing group, because I was a published author then, and also I have a degree in teaching, so it seemed like a good thing that I could do. So we got together, and it was a success, and we became a group who met frequently, and in fact now there are two groups, but the Wright Girls was the number one group and still remains the number one group, and we thought we were doing great stuff, lots of exercises, lots of assignments, lots of exciting things together, going into coffee shops, listening to people's conversations and then making stories up around them. So our writing started to get to a point where we felt we wanted to go a bit further. So that's when we thought maybe we should write a book. And that's how it started. The girls in the Wright Girls group have changed a little throughout the years, but for the last few years, and in fact the last at least 6 years, maybe a little longer, it's just been we six.
Okay, tell us the names just so...
I will. Lynn Rowand, Susan Herrick, Erica Hauptmann, Caroline Gilbert, and Carol Armstrong Hooper.
Okay,
and of course,
yourself.
Myself. Yeah. So we're the six.
Okay, and I like the title, The Wright Girls, with a W.
Yes.
The Wright Girls. But I'm most intrigued how you actually, I mean, how do six people write a book?
Well, everybody asks us this question, and I think we have to say that we have become, it's almost like a business, the way we set about it. We go away, we're lucky enough to be able to go away for a brainstorming session to Hermanus, and it's there that we spend maybe a weekend. We have an idea in our minds, and we have a flip chart person who's brilliant on our flip charts, Carol, and we throw ideas at each other, and we decide which range, what we're going to do. We were particularly keen on this book, The Dire Straits, because of the water situation. So that was something that we wanted to write about. But with all our books, we've planned it, and we do it in a very democratic way. We sit around a table, we have ideas, we talk about them, and we plan, we plot, we do timelines, we do we listen to each other as well. And I think that's probably one of the great things about this group. We listen to each other's ideas and we respect each other's ideas and always discuss them. And if we have any disagreements of any sort, we put it to the vote. So if one of us wants to start a character in a certain way and the others don't agree, because we have to often tie in the characters together, to one speaking to another one, so it's exactly. It is quite...
That's what I was thinking, you know, because you might think of character A and one of the other people thinks of character D.
That's right.
How do you get them to sort of bond?
Well, it's quite difficult.
I was going to say, yes.
No, it is quite difficult, and we have to meet quite a lot. Normally, we used to, in the earlier days, meet once a month, but now, of course, we meet, when we're writing a book, we meet much more frequently than that. Mm-hmm. So if two people are going to be writing together like that, a conversation, they will meet up and do it together and practice it. In fact, with this last book, one of the main parts of the book is a dinner party. And we set up a dinner party and we all sat around the table with our knives and forks and our wine glasses. And we acted out this dinner party, which actually was a great help for us. We got the characters into sync and we sort of play acted it. Uh-huh. But from the business point of view as well, we have to be... obviously, some of us are better at technical things, others better with ideas, others better at printing, getting the printers and the promoters organized. So we've all got skills, specific skills, but we do remarkably well together. I think it's that we just really do try and treat it as a business.
Because it is a forum that could become, you know, rather difficult where people... to have rows and things, because clearly you're all quite strong-minded, intelligent people.
Well, we're all women who have been in business or in top jobs, so mm-hmm. we're all quite strong. And I think we know that discipline of being in a corporate job where you have to listen to what's going on in boardroom and so on. So we've never had a big upset. We've had the odd disagreement, but mm-hmm. we always then sit down and work it out.
Right. So a disagreement sometimes is good as well and can in itself be creative.
Very much so. In fact, we've really got some good ideas where somebody will say, well, why don't we do it that way? And we've been planning it that way, another way. So, yes, it's very, very lucrative for us to have lots of ideas going on.
Right.
Once we've got everything in situ, of course, people often ask us, how do you pick the characters?
Yes, exactly.
And somehow the characters just seem to pick us in a way.
Oh.
We know that some people are better at writing in that way or others in that way. We sometimes have put names in a pot and pulled out who we're going to be and taken it from there. But in this particular book, In Dire Straits, we kind of just fell into the right parts and it worked.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about the structure of In Dire Straits in a moment, but let's just take a music break now, Priscilla. As a writer and all, I've been intrigued to know about your choice. Now, see a lovely sort of, shall we say, nostalgia piece first, We'll Gather Lilacs. How did this make it onto your list?
Well, my father was obviously in the war, and this is very much a war song, We'll Gather Lilacs in the Spring Again, Till You Come Home. My father was a talented pianist, although self-taught, and was able to play without any music or anything, so it was he was so lucky. I wish I'd inherited that skill. And it was his favorite song. And even when he was quite old and unable to see properly, he could still play We'll Gather Lilacs. So it does have a great sentimental value for me.
Gather lilacs in the spring again and walk together down an English lane until our hearts have learned to sing again. When you come home once more, and in the evening by the firelight's glow, you'll hold me close and never let me go. Your eyes will tell me all I want to know. When you come home once more, and in the evening by the firelight's glow, you'll hold me close and never let me go. Your eyes will tell me
the Lilacs, a lovely nostalgic song from the wars there. And the first choice of my guest on People of Note this week, who's Priscilla Holmes, who is the founder of a group of women called the Right Girls. And as I've said before, Right is spelled with a W because they do write. And their latest novel is called In Dire Straits. And I want to talk a little bit about that, Priscilla, because apart from all the adventures you had around there, which we'll come to, I'm interested in the structure of it. It's structured in a fairly unusual way for someone who might not know what they're in for. How would you describe how this book is put together?
Well, Rodney, the way we started writing this book was to write about the situation of Day Zero coming up in Cape Town. And we wondered what it would be like for a group of women or a group of people living in an estate where suddenly they were told they weren't going to have any water. So we picked six characters who would be treating this situation in different ways. One would be absolutely against it and would carry on sprinkling her roses day and night and couldn't care less about the water situation. And others would be much more caring and understand that being a water warrior and understanding more about the water situation would be a good thing for them. So we started writing this book as really a first. I don't think anyone has written anything like a novel about the water situation. And then we heard about the tunnels. And there are the tunnels that run under the streets of Cape Town, so that when you're driving near the castle and in that part of the city, you're actually driving over the top of the castles that were built in 1695 by the Dutch and indeed improved in the 1800s again by the Dutch. And the tunnels were built so that the water that comes off the mountain, there are 30 magnificent streams of pure lovely water coming off the mountain, would come through the tunnels and then serve as the ships that were coming past and going up to the out to the East Indies and across to Australia. So this is where the ships were drawing their water from to take them on their travels, and the water would be put into big casks and taken along. So that water is still flowing, and we heard about it, and we thought, well, if this water is still flowing, why don't we know more about it, and why isn't it being used? So we heard that there were tunnel tours going on in the tunnels, going from the castle, and we booked a tour to go on. Now, fortunately for me, or unfortunately, I had to go overseas, so I wasn't part of what happened. In the book, we predict, strangely, that there would be a catastrophe in the tunnels, and that indeed some people were going to get swept away. And we know that the water that's going through there now gets swept away right out to sea into the shipping lines. And there are at least 3.5 million litres of water leaving the mountain, going through the tunnels and going out to sea every single day.
Good grief.
In the city. Yeah. So obviously we
even during the drought.
Even during the drought.
Yeah.
So although there are some of the water is being used by some of, there is the South African breweries who are using some of that water, mm-hmm. most of it is actually just going out to sea. So when we organised the tunnel tour, the girls went down into the tunnels on June the 10th, nearly two years ago, when we were in the middle of writing this book. Mm-hmm. And what happened to them down there was really a danger, a life threatening situation occurred. I don't want to give too much away about it because, you know, the book, but what we've decided to do was not incorporate their experience into the book, but rather keep it at the end and call it the truth.
Yes,
about
yes.
what actually happened.
Yes. Because as you say, it's a novel first and foremost.
It is.
So these things were predicted, but you had no idea that something real along those lines was going to happen.
Absolutely no idea. I mean, it was a very dangerous and tricky situation, and it really was a miracle that the girls survived it. There had been a storm two nights before in Cape Town, and obviously something had blocked some of the tunnel, one of the tunnels perhaps at the top, mm-hmm. and then it was released. And as they were in the tunnels and beginning to walk through these amazing structures, because they really are amazing, suddenly they heard a noise behind them, and they turned round, and there it was coming. The water was coming.
It would have been a wall of water.
It was a wall of water. And they were very lucky to get out. Mm-hmm. As I say, I don't want to give too much away about this, but a lot of people have found that they want to read the end of the book before the beginning of the book to find out what happened. But it is quite unusual, the book, the way it's structured. We have tried, we really agonized whether we should put this in what really happened into the novel. And we thought, no, let's just keep with our original plan. And then at the end of the book, we've called it The Truth. And there you get the full story.
And then each of the writers has written their experience of what clearly was quite a traumatic experience. I mean, because they were virtually trapped for a while underground.
They were
being
trapped,
rushed along.
They
As
were.
You say, let's not go into too much detail, but what an experience. And at least they lived to tell the tale.
At least they did, yes.
I think the claustrophobia thing would get to me. I don't think I could go down there. And I know there are tunnel tours, but now this puts me off completely.
I don't think there are tunnel tours at the moment, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
We don't think so. But I think it was for 6 months, they couldn't write about it.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why it took a long time for this book to be published, that we had to wait until everybody felt strong enough to write about their experience.
Oh, so it really was traumatic.
It was very, very traumatic, yes.
And it is vividly depicted, so let's not give away. It's a good selling point for the book. But interestingly, I see, to create a bit of drama around what was a very serious drama, your next piece of music depicts a storm. Have you specially chosen it for that reason?
I specially chose Beethoven's
Pastoral,
and the thunder and the lightning and the sort of feeling of tremendous drama that there is in that music,
right.
Depicted to me what I think those girls must have felt when they were with this thundering water coming at them in those tunnels.
Let's listen to that musical depiction by Beethoven of the storm from his Symphony No. 6, the Pastoral Symphony.
Thank you.
It's a marvelous depiction, that, and also in its way quite terrifying, of a thunderstorm, which Beethoven created as the fourth movement of his Symphony No. 6, the Pastoral Symphony, with dramatic effects, bearing in mind that people like Berlioz hadn't been around yet to make that sort of sound in the orchestra. And that was performed by the Berlin Philharmonic, conducted by Sir Simon Rattle. And it was the choice of my guest, Priscilla Holmes, who's with me on the People of Note studio this week. People of Note brought to you each week, this time by Peter Turin Productions. And we're talking about the Wright Girls, W-R-I-T-E, six people who write books together. And somehow it works. And their latest novel, In Dire Straits, is the one that's just been published, and also the one with a dramatic depiction of what happened in those tunnels when they were flooded and these poor ladies somehow had to get out. Priscilla, I want to just move away from the book and the Wright Girls at the moment, because I'm quite intrigued. You've implied that you've traveled quite a lot. What is your background? You also said you're a published author. Tell me a little bit about your background.
Well, if you'd like me to start when I was quite young.
Well, just give us a potted history.
Well, my father was in the British Army. He was Provost Marshal of the Military Police. And after the war, he stayed on in that capacity. And we lived in a variety of countries. We lived in Austria for a while. I was quite little then. And then back to England, the usual sort of army brat kind of family.
Oh, yeah.
And then we moved to Hong Kong, which is where I lived for 5 years nearly. I had a wonderful time in Hong Kong, and was growing up there as a young woman, teenager, lots of activities, lots of social times. And of course, Hong Kong was such a wonderful place then. They used to call it the Fragrant Isle.
Oh, yes, I remember.
It was so beautiful. It has changed enormously, of course, with the years. And then after that, lived in England for a while, and then went to live in Africa, and lived in Zambia for a while, in Zimbabwe, and then went to Australia, where I lived for nearly 20 years, and then came to South Africa and was remarried here. I've lived here first in Johannesburg, where I used to listen to you on the radio.
<That's right. laughs>
And we've been living in Cape Town for about 12 years now.
Ah, okay. But now, where did the writing thing come? As I said, you said you're a published author. Have you always been interested in writing?
Always wanted to write. Used to write as a little girl. Used to write journals, stories for my school friends, diaries, family histories. You know, it was always my subject was to write. But of course, one has to have a different career. I mean, you can't make it as a writer. So I started to be a teacher and then moved on to adult education. So that was really my job, management training, that sort of work. But I always kept journals whenever we went overseas or whenever anything happened. So I've always been a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we retired from Johannesburg, we had a beach house down at the Eastern Cape and in Kenton-on-Sea. And I met the most extraordinary lady down there called Joan Broster, who was quite famous in her time. She did write books about the fact that she had gone to live in the Red Blanket Valley in the Eastern Cape as a lady who was quite young. And of course, this is many years ago. And she'd been a trader down there. And we met up when she was an older person and not very well, and she started to tell me the story of a young girl who was educated much against the chief of the village. He didn't really want this education to take place, but she did go. She went up to a farm school and she became educated, and then actually won a scholarship, went on to have some time at DSG in Grahamstown. And that's where the story ended, really, for this girl. So, of course, it immediately took my mind. And that's when I started to write my first novel, which was a proper novel about this girl and what happened to her. It was published by Majaji Books about 4 years ago now. And it's called Now I See You. But that wasn't my first book. My first book was a children's book, which a teenage book called The Children of Myrrh, which was my first book, which I wrote in Johannesburg and which sold extremely well. About people who came here before us, how they lived and how they taught humans to live, making fires, making homes. And they were are still with us, but in a different format now, the Children of Myrrh.
But that must have captivated the minds of little children as well, I would have thought.
It did. Yeah. I had very good sales for that.
And this book that you wrote about this lady that you've just been talking about, has she died subsequently?
She did die, just actually, sadly, before my book was published.
Oh, okay.
But when I knew about this book, and I felt that I had to really go and find out about all the places where these small villages are up there in that magnificent area in Corby, Maclare, Tiffindale, up Nordia's Neck, up in those areas where it's the foothills of the Drakensberg, magnificent scenery up there. And right down in the valleys, tiny valleys, are these villages with the smoke just coming out of the, you can say, and people are still living in quite a primitive way there, or they were when we were doing our research. So my very patient husband and I travelled all over the area trying to get the feeling of what it was like to live there. And my heroine, Tabitha, she did escape from the valley. She was given a punishment for not staying on. And 14 years later, as a detective with the South African police, she goes back to the valley 14 years later and has to find out there is a clue in the valley which is going to help her solve a crime.
Okay.
So it's been quite a successful book.
What is it called? Just remind me.
Now I See You.
Now I See You.
Published by Majaji Books.
Okay. And so then, and that was the last one you did before?
I'm just writing the sequel now, actually.
Oh, okay. So you're still getting a chance to write on your own,
well,
away from the right girls.
Yeah, that is quite difficult. I do love to be with the right girls. And of course, writing a book alone is a very different thing from writing a book with other people to bounce ideas off.
Yes.
And I'm much busier now than when I first arrived in Cape Town 12 years ago. And now I really have to be very disciplined about finding time to write my own things.
Okay. Now, you mentioned Hong Kong, and I think, Priscilla, you're right in saying that you said it was the place where you had your first real taste of classical music, and the next piece you've chosen is from The Pearl Fishers by Bizet, the famous duet for the tenor and the baritone. And did this come from the Hong Kong days as well?
It certainly did. I was taken there as a young woman. I suppose I must have been about 16. And we went to the Peninsula Hotel, which is where they were putting on the Pearl Fishers, Bizet's Pearl Fishers. And I'd never really realized about classical music before. I'd never heard anything like this. And it awakened in me a huge interest in classical music and a huge desire to know more about it. It seemed to me the most beautiful, magical thing I'd ever heard. And it's always been one of my great favorites.
Okay, this is quite a famous recording. It's the one with Jussi Björling and Robert Merrill.
Oh,
Well, it's known as the Friendship Duet. It's from the Pearl Fishers by Georges Bizet. And that famous recording there with Jussi Björling, tenor, and Robert Merrill, baritone. Another choice of my guest on People of Note this week on Fine Music Radio, Priscilla Holmes. Holmes, I should say, not put the L in. We will talk about you as an author on your own just now. But Priscilla's the founder of this group called The Wright Girls, W-R-I-T-E, their latest novel, which we've just been talking about, In Dire Straits. But I'm interested, Priscilla, that you still are writing alone. And with these ladies that you've got together as The Wright Girls, you said you'd met them and started helping. In other words, you mentored them as well, didn't you? They all wanted to write, but you gave them that little spark that they needed.
Well, yes, I probably did. I always insisted that we did exercises before we wrote anything. Mm-hmm. And I used my skills and indeed skills I've learned over the years and books I've read and so on to try and get our writing up to scratch. Mm-hmm. And we certainly have improved. I mean, in 12 years, our writing has, mine as well, has got so much better.
What was the first book you published as The Wright Girls? Can you
yes, it was called Women Like Us,
and it was
short stories.
Okay.
That was our first book.
Because I came across you and the group the first time about The Man with the Blue Eyes.
Yes, which was a great success, actually, The Man with the Blue Eyes.
Was that a novel as well?
It was, yes, it was a novel. It was a very popular novel. I think perhaps because we had an extremely good-looking man on the cover with burning blue eyes. So that was a great selling point, and mm-hmm. we did really well with that book. And Pat, often we have actually thought maybe we might do a rerun of that book because it was popular. People still talk about it. And each time we do a book, we review it. We review our own writing. We always want to do better. We go to the summer school. We go to various professional courses to try and help us to get better, all of us.
Right.
Because the more you write, the better you get at
Absolutely.
It, of course. Yes.
And each of them has their own sort of, as you said, interest, but they're women who are professional or housewives
yes.
or
no,
mothers.
No, we've all been professional women in all working in industry or running our own businesses. We're all quite strong personalities.
Mm-hmm. Which makes it all the more extraordinary that you get on so well.
Yeah, I think that's probably why we do. We're used to discipline. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're working in the corporate world, as I did for many years, and as some of the others did as well, you have to understand how the discipline of a meeting. So,
and have you, apart from the Wright Girls and meeting at Hermanus, as you say, with the flip chart and all the things you do, do you find that you've become friends? You'd have a dinner party, a lunch party, and relax and not talk about your next novel.
Yes. Fun. We do that. We certainly always celebrate after we've done a presentation or certainly after a book has been launched. And we had a big launch for this book, Dire Straits, at the Kelvin Club just before Christmas. We had over about 120 people in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, we were so relieved. We really enjoyed some glasses of champagne afterwards. It was very good. But we, funnily enough, we don't sort of see each other all the time. We've all got very diverse lives and diverse interests. But we're very much a group of very closely knit women.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have any problem or anything, we can always call on one another for any help that's needed.
Okay. Well, the next choice is a great favorite. Your next choice, Bridge Over Troubled Waters. I mean, it's a great piece, but is there a special reason you've chosen it?
Well, everyone has times in their lives, Rodney. I'm sure we all could relate to that, where we have sadness, we have loss, we have betrayal, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I must say that this song has meant a lot to me over the years. It's helped me through sad times, and I've always loved listening to the Simon and Garfunkel song. It's a beautiful piece of music for me.
Feeling small. when you're down and out, when you're on the street, when evening falls so hard, I will comfort you. I'll take your part. Oh, when darkness comes and pain is all around, like a bridge over troubled water, I will lay me down.
Sail on, silver girl, sail on by. Your time has come to shine. All your dreams are on their way. See how they shine.
Well, that's certainly a classic, isn't it, Priscilla? Bridge Over Troubled Waters, Simon and Garfunkel's rather magnificent song. Priscilla Holmes is my guest on People of Note this week here on Fine Music Radio, talking about the Wright Girls, W-R-I-T-E. I keep having to say that because I think it's a clever little thing. But I discovered during our chats, Priscilla, that there's another group. I thought this was unique. Tell me what the other group is all about.
Well, the other group is fairly new, actually, and it consists of some very talented writers, and we've called ourselves the Word Birds.
Okay.
So, but these are wonderful girls.
Different, completely different from this
yes,
group.
Yes, a different group altogether, and they just want to write. They want exercises. And they want to write. We have every month we have a different assignment to write about. We try and make it as difficult as possible, and we write, and it's never the same. So whatever the thing is, whatever the subject is, the result is always different. And that's the same with the Wright Girls as well. Mm-hmm. You can have one subject to write about, and everything is different.
You mean each of the people?
Yes.
Give me an example of a subject.
For instance, the last subject that we did with the Word Birds was why we killed the postman, which could be transferred into any sort of situation. And we had some really interesting replies about why we killed the postman, some of them quite naughty and others quite horrific. That was just an example. Other things we've written about would be this month's assignment is the driver. Now, again, you could choose all sorts of different ideas about that. So that's what the sort of thing that we try and do.
Okay, but they haven't been published yet.
No, well, two of the girls are published, but in this particular group, they don't want to write a book or anything. They're only too happy just to write and to have that day together with me and them. And just to write for the joy of writing.
And these people do have some skill, obviously. They know about the language and about grammar and dreaded punctuation, which
the
I'm so obsessed about.
Yes.
And so your guiding hand is sort of bringing things out of them, letting their imaginations fly, and at the same time making sure that the actual standard is good English-wise.
I do hope so, yes. That's what I strive for, yes, definitely.
So we can look forward quite soon then to the Word Birds releasing their first book.
I hope not.
And the Write Girls, what are they up to? Have you got anything up your
sleeve
yet?
Well, we've decided that we've just got to relax now for the rest of the year, but we're already thinking about something next year maybe. Mm-hmm. But I think this has been a very dark and difficult book to write. Yes. And the girls' experience was so enormous that we're just going to have a quieter rest of year doing writing and exercises, trying to sharpen up our styles and become better at structure and perhaps better at character description and so on. So
it's a marvelous idea. I mean, when I discovered about The Man with the Blue Eyes, I had no idea you existed, The Right Girls, now the Word Birds also coming out. It's a lovely idea. And what fun. It's just amazing that you managed to work together. And as I said before, this book in dire straits is interestingly structured because, as you said, each person has their chance to write about things as you go through the book. And there's the cohesion there as well, isn't there? And to get it published, who is your publisher?
Well, we self-publish, and then we've been involved with a publisher who has helped us. And helped us with distribution. So this book is now actually in the shops.
Okay.
So in nearly all the shops around South Africa.
Okay.
So we've been helped to do that.
It's been fascinating learning all about this and about, as I say, when you do go and look at the book in dire straits, in exclusive books, whoever, maybe you'll want to have a look at the back to see the truth, just to whet your appetite about the tunnel experience. But my guest has been Priscilla Holmes of The Right Girls, and your last piece of music, we're back to opera and the great La Boheme and the even greater Renata Tebaldi.
Yes, it was a wonderful experience for me. I was living in Sydney at the time, and of course going to the Opera House over many years, you're always stunned, amazed by how beautiful it is.
Mm.
And the first time I heard La Boheme at the Sydney Opera House, I was almost, I just couldn't believe the feeling. And of course, when you go out at interval and you're standing on the decks outside and the liners are passing you by and the boats are there and the lights of the harbour bridge are on and you've got this music ringing in your mind, it was, for me, the ultimate experience, seeing La Boheme there. It's my favourite opera anyway.
And Tebaldi, you've chosen specifically the Tebaldi.
Yes,
recording.
I particularly like that one. I think she was just, to me, that this was the ultimate.
Oh, yes. Gosh, a magnificent singer, Renata Tebaldi. Well, that's how we're going to end with Mimi's aria from Act 1 of La Boheme by Puccini. And Priscilla Holmes, thank you very much, and all strength to your arm and to the Right Girls and to the Word Birds. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rodney, so much for having me.
e al ritorno
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions. By the pricking of my thumbs, something wicked this way comes. This May, Peter Turin presents Macbeth at Theatre on the Bay, starring Stephen Jubber, Matthew Baldwin, Talon Ramsamy, David Viviers, and Marcel Mayer in the title role. Does absolute power corrupt absolutely? Don't miss Macbeth. From the 15th of May to the 1st of June. Directed by Fred Abramser, only at Theatre on the Bay. Book now.